Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, August 18th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news, as closing pitcher Edwin Diaz was placed on the 15-day IL with neck inflammation. It's probably from all the times he's had to turn around to watch home runs and hits fly past him, as he's struggled massively since returning from the injured list. Reliever Tanner Scott should take over as the closer for the Dodgers, while starting pitcher Emmett Sheehan was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. He could pitch in long relief, but he could also be a direct replacement for Justin Wroblewski in the rotation, as the southpaw Wroblewski was just placed on the 15-day IL, though the Dodgers rotation is getting healthier with Shohei Ohtani on the mend, likely on the verge of returning to the rotation, and Tyler Glass now on the verge of returning from the injured list. So Sheehan's time as a potential starter could be short-lived. Lastly, catcher Hunter Goodman was placed on the 10-day IL with a shoulder strain. It was made retroactive to August 15th, so Goodman will be able to return early next week. He'll be eligible to be reinstated from the IL. So that's good news, considering Goodman has been so good this year. So the Rockies should get their all-star catcher back before the end of the month. Catcher Braxton Fulford was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and he'll be on the short side of a backstop platoon with Brett Sullivan. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Carlos Rodon was activated from the 15-day IL to start in Baltimore. He missed about a month and a half with elbow inflammation, and then in his return, he tossed four innings, allowing two hits and one earned run, walking two while striking out four, inducing nine whiffs with 30% CSW across 66 pitches. And Rodon was limited in his return from the IL as expected, but he looked like classic Rodon with his mid-90s four-seamer sitting upstairs and his signature slider landing all around the zone. It's going to take him a minute to get his command down. That's always something he struggled with in his career. It's going to be something that a pitcher struggles with when they return from the IL, and Rodon struggled with his command on Tuesday, but he has ace upside when he is commanding heaters in concert with sliders and changeups down low. I think I'm starting Rodon without hesitation versus the lowly Blue Jays next. In a corresponding move, starting pitcher Max Fried was placed on the 15-day IL with an elbow bone bruise. Next, outfielder Noel V. Marte was optioned to the minors by the Reds. Michael Tolia will get into the lineup in the corner outfield more versus left-handed pitchers. Tolia is a switch hitter who has the ability to play first base, but the Reds have been putting him in the outfield as well. So with Marte gone, Tolia should see more time there. And in a corresponding move, catcher Will Banfield was recalled from the minors. Next, starting pitcher A.J. Smith-Shaver was recalled from the minors. He's expected to start today in Minnesota as the Braves are moving to a six-man rotation. I don't know if that's a temporary thing and maybe Shaver's just making a spot start, but for now, Smith-Shaver is expected to start in Minnesota today. Reliever Tyler Kinley was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Mason Barnett was optioned to the minors, and reliever Taylor Rashi was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Barnett had been pitching in the rotation for the A's, but it had not been going well. The transition from the bullpen back to the rotation had not been going well. So with Barnett out, I think Jeffrey Springs is set to return today from the injured list, though it's not confirmed. However, Barnett is out of the A's rotation for at least the time being. And lastly, catcher Danny Jansen was activated from the 60-day IL after missing the minimum time with a forearm strain. He should split catching duties with Kyle Higashioka, as catcher Austin Wins was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, starting pitcher Matt Tugboat Wilkinson is expected to have his contract selected from the minors today to make his MLB debut in Cleveland. He was initially scheduled to do that yesterday. That's what I had reported. That's what I saw everywhere. But It looked like Carson Wisenhunt started instead. So we'll get Wilkinson today. Tugboat is a dope nickname, which already makes him somebody that's very likable. We saw him have some success in the WBC as well, pitching for Team Canada. And I just saw a clip surface today of Matt Wilkinson pitching in the Little League World Series, absolutely dominating in that one as well. And that suggests that he's been a dominant pitcher throughout his career. And that didn't stop when he pitched in AA and AAA this year with a 3.40 ERA, a 1 whip, and a 27% strikeout rate. The 23-year-old southpaw was acquired from the Guardians in the Patrick Bailey trade earlier this year. So the Giants definitely see some potential in Tugboat Wilkinson. And I'm excited to see what he looks like in his MLB debut in Cleveland today. Another MLB debut, starting pitcher Ethan Pecco is expected to have his contract selected from the minors tomorrow to make his MLB debut for the Astros against the Angels. He'll be replacing Ronel Blanco in the rotation. Pecco is a 23-year-old right-handed pitcher. He's the Astros' number 9 prospect, and he's got a 60-grade fastball, according to FanGraphs. At low A and triple A, he's pitched to a 4.57 ERA with a 1.33 whip and a 25% strikeout rate. I'm excited to see what Pecco's 60-grade fastball looks like and what makes it a 60-grade offering. And lastly, closing pitcher Daniel Palencia is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL today after missing 2 months with elbow inflammation. Palencia should almost immediately return to being the Cubs closer, if not right away, especially with Jacob Webb having pitched on back-to-back days. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Fernando Tatis Jr., who helped the Padres to a win in Queens, going 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He also robbed a grand slam, so a huge game for Fernando Tatis. You should definitely go watch the clip of him robbing that grand slam because he pimped the heck out of that robbery, and it was dope. But Tatis is up to 15 homers now. The first one was a bomb, 452 feet at 113 miles per hour, and the second one went 379 feet at 104 miles per hour. And Tatis actually didn't homer for his first 55 games, so once he finally did, he took off. And since then, he's batted .288 with 15 dingers and a 142 WRC plus, looking like the classic Tatis Jr. Expect him to finish the season strong and line himself up to be a top pick in fantasy again next year. Next, we've got catcher Alejandro Kirk, who helped the Blue Jays to win in Tampa Bay, going 3-for-6 with 2 runs, a double, a home run, and 3 runs batted in. It was his 6th homer of the year, and it traveled 414 feet at 101 miles per hour. And Kirk missed nearly 2 months early in the year with a fractured thumb, and it took him a while to get going once he returned from it, but he's been dope in the second half, batting .361 with 4 homers and a 168 WRC plus while walking more than he's striking out. One of my favorite attributes from a hitter. Kirk is not a StatCast standout, but he's got some of the best contact skills in baseball, and he knows how to tap into his power by pulling fly balls. We saw him reach another power level last year with 15 home runs and then take it to another level in the playoffs with 5 more. So this level of performance isn't out of the blue for Alejandro Kirk. He's batting in the middle of the Toronto lineup, and he needs to be rostered if you got an underperforming catcher on your fantasy roster. And lastly, third baseman David Hamilton helped the Brewers to win against the Mariners, going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, a home run, 4 runs batted in, and 2 steals to complete the combo meal. Hamilton now has 4 home runs and 24 stolen bases on the year. The homer went 393 feet at 99 miles per hour. Hamilton was a key contributor to the Brewers' 22-0 win over the Mariners. That was an absolute blowout. And Hamilton's sort of the secondary leadoff man at the bottom of the lineup for the Brewers, but he gets pretty regular playing opportunities on the strong side of a third base platoon. Despite what Tuesday's performance might suggest, though, he's not much of a hitter with a career 80 WRC plus and a mark 15% below league average this year, though Hamilton gets on base enough to allow him to make the most of his elite speed. He's stolen 20 plus bases in each of the past 3 years and should reach 30 for the second time in his career this year. If you need a rabbit on your fantasy team with few contributions in categories outside of steals, David Hamilton is your guy. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with George Klaassen, who helped the Angels to win in Houston, tossing seven shutout innings, allowing just one hit and three walks while striking out seven. He induced 17 whiffs with 34% CSW across 86 pitches, and Klaassen earned the gallows pole as our backup streamer of the day came through. Klaassen's heater is solid at 97 miles per hour with decent movement, but he just needs to make sure he throws it for strikes to set up his elite slider. 58% strikes on the fastball isn't ideal, but it didn't end up burning him as he returned 14 outs on 15 balls in play to keep him fortunate. And it still set up his slider to absolutely dominate as the breaker went for 12 whiffs and 44% CSW while racking up five strikeouts. I really like Klaassen's arsenal. I just want to see some better command to limit the free passes. That's been his problem throughout his minor league career, throughout his major league career. And maybe the arrival of his changeup would be dope too, to make him less prone to left-handed batters. But this is the most promising pitcher to come out of the Angels since Reed Detmers. And of course, those two guys have the same arsenal. But with this 97 mile per hour two-plane fastball and an elite slider, I'm starting Klaassen everywhere in Texas next. Next, we've got Kyle Harrison versus the Mariners. He helped the Brewers to a win, tossing five shutout innings, allowing two hits and two walks while striking out eight. He induced 10 whiffs with 38% CSW across 79 pitches, and Harrison earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 38% CSW. And he was limited because the Brewers won by 22, though it was only a six-run lead when he was pulled. Maybe they're trying to sort of keep Harrison good, preserve Harrison after he's been somebody who hasn't thrown this many innings throughout his career, and he looked a little bit bad last time out. I'm thrilled to see him bounce back after that concerning start in last week, though the concerns haven't disappeared after this one. Harrison was throwing one to two ticks slower, and he struggled to find his command as fastballs flew too high above the zone, while curveballs either hit the dirt or hung out in the middle of the zone. He got the job done thanks to a passive Mets lineup, but I'm worried he won't be as fortunate next time. It was a passive Mariners lineup, sorry. He gets the Mets next, and that's, I think, a good thing for Harrison, as I am not super confident in him. He's definitely had an amazing season, 2.84 ERA, 122 strikeouts in 20 starts this year for Harrison. But with the command starting to fall, with the velocity starting to fall, I'm getting a bit concerned about Harrison, but we're starting him anyway in Queens next. Next, we've got Shane Baz, who did all he could, but the Orioles lost to the Yankees. He tossed six and a third innings, allowing four hits and 3 earned runs, walking two while striking out 10. He induced 16 whiffs with 30% CSW across 104 pitches. And Baz also bounced back from a concerning start last week, during which his velocity was down and he refused to rely on a pitch other than his reduced fastball. Well, the velocity is back north of 96 miles per hour, and Baz threw plenty of strikes to set up his curveball to dominate with 10 whiffs and five strikeouts. Curiously, though, Baz completely axed his cutter. It's a pitch that he threw nearly 20% of the time through the season's first 3 months, but he's thrown it, since the beginning of July, he's thrown it just 11% of the time, which I can't say is my favorite development, as it gives him an option to neutralize left-handed batters. When he doesn't have it, he has to rely pretty heavily on a changeup that I think is inferior to the cutter. However, that's maybe not completely true, as Baz has used that cutter more versus right-handed pitchers, sort of as a slider. And it does work as a whiff pitch and a strike pitch versus both-handedness, but I think he needs that in there. He needs that something to give the four-seamer and curveball support, because I don't really trust the sinker and the changeup that much. However, the four-seamer and curve are cooking, but I just love to see that cutter return. Baz was pushed a little bit too far on Tuesday, watching two inherited runners score after being pushed into the seventh and then pulled with two batters on. So this was a truly elite start through six frames, making Baz an easy start versus his former club, the Rays, next. And lastly, we've got Cal Quantrill versus the Nationals. He tossed seven scoreless innings, allowing four hits, walking nobody while striking out five. He induced five whiffs with 27% CSW across 91 pitches, and the unquantifiable cannot be stopped. Since joining the rotation in late June for the Rangers, he has a 2.79 ERA, a 1.08 whip, and an 18% strikeout rate. Pretty impressive numbers. Obviously, the strikeout rate isn't great, but those ratios are awesome. This was Quantrill's longest start of the year, as he completed seven frames. And with just five whiffs, you know it required a lot of good fortune, not just the five strikeouts, which weren't necessarily due to a high put away rate, which was at 45%, but were more a product of a few called strikes taken in two strike counts. He had three looking Ks, which is not a sustainable path to strikeouts, but the batted ball luck was off the charts as he returned 16 outs on 20 balls in play and stranded all four base runners that he allowed. Quantrill threw strikes and he mixed his pitches well, but he didn't limit hard contact or return grounders the way you'd expect for somebody to get such good fortune on batted balls. And the break sort of just went his way. And that's sort of been the case with Quantrill this year. That's sort of been the case when Quantrill succeeds throughout his career. And I'm just not going to trust a guy with a trio of mediocre fastball variants and a volatile splitter, even against the Angels next. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, David Bednar recorded his 28th save with a perfect ninth. Mason Montgomery pitched a perfect ninth for his fifth save. He needs to be rostered everywhere. That is the Pirates closer, and he's got top 10 closer potential. When he was first coming up with the Rays, Rick Graham and I compared him to a left-handed Mason Miller with the stuff that he has. He's got the same initials. First name too is the same, but Mason Montgomery is dope. Riley O'Brien recorded his National League leading 32nd save with a perfect ninth. Brooks Raley pitched a perfect ninth for his first save as Yoan Duran was unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days. Speaking of Mason Miller, he recorded his 31st save with a perfect ninth. Yoandry Gomez pitched a scoreless ninth with a ninth for his 19th save. Ben Joyce recorded his third save with a perfect ninth. And lastly, Tanner Scott worked around a run to secure a four-out save for the Dodgers. It was his 17th save of the year. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Justin Martinez is not confirmed to be the Diamondbacks closer yet, but I think he's going to be on the fast track there. He pitched a hitless eighth with the Diamondbacks trailing by five as they looked to get him some work as he hadn't made appearance since returning from the IL a couple days ago. Hogan Harris allowed three runs in the ninth inning to blow his sixth save and take his second loss. Jacob Webb pitched a hitless ninth in a tie game and earned his sixth win when the Cubs walked it off. And lastly, Jordan Romano pitched a scoreless ninth in a two-run deficit. He hadn't pitched since last Wednesday, so this was a maintenance outing for Romano. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, August 19th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Peyton Tolley versus Brandon Pfaadt. Tolley has been reliably elite recently. I've compared him to Eckhart Tolley in the way that his success, his reliably elite production has inspired inner peace within me and within plenty of fantasy managers across the country. But Peyton, I'm looking for Tolley to continue his incredible success recently. Brandon Pfaadt also has been incredible recently, not to the same level as Tolley, as he's not a big strikeout arm, but oh my gosh, he's been absolutely dominant since returning from the minors and rejoining the Diamondbacks rotation. It's not really success that I believe in necessarily because it hasn't been a consistent approach and it's heavily reliant on batted balls. But regardless, Pfaadt has been cooking recently. In terms of probable starters, we've got eight guys in the auto starts tier, including Peyton Tolley. We've also got Drew Rasmussen versus the Blue Jays, Chase Burns versus the Cardinals, and Logan Gilbert in Milwaukee. Our probably starts tier has five guys, and our questionable starts tier has four guys, and our do not starts tier has the rest of them, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Max Scherzer in Tampa Bay. It's not the best day for streaming here on Wednesday, but Scherzer has actually been decent across his past couple of starts. He's on the hunt for ninth place all time on the strikeouts leaderboard. He still needs 14 more. I doubt he's going to get them all in one go here in Tampa Bay, but he's been reliable enough and he's been so dominant throughout his career that you never know if Scherzer could have one of those vintage performances. I'd also keep an eye out for Kumar Rocker versus the Nationals. His slider heavy approach is one that has been more reliable than we expected him to be coming into the season as his fastballs are very hittable. But as long as he relies on the sliders and avoids damage with his trio of fastball variants, Rocker could be fine against a diminished Nationals lineup. If you're looking for a pitcher with an opener, Jose Urquidy should have an opener pitching on the north side of Chicago. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd target Guardians hitters versus Matt Wilkinson in progressive field. Of course, I'm very excited for Wilkinson's debut, though pitcher debuts are never that exceptional unless it's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. So Guardians hitters could tee off against Wilkinson. I'd also target Cardinals and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark, one of the best hitters parks in baseball. We'll see Matthew Liberatore square off against Chase Burns in that one. I'd also target Angels hitters versus Ethan Pecco in Daikin Park. It's Pecco's MLB debut, so Angels hitters could have a field day if Pecco can't control his emotions and his adrenaline. And lastly, I target Dodgers and Rockies hitters in Coors, the best hitters park in baseball. We'll see Roky Sasaki square off against Kyle Freeland in that one. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Ben Joyce is not expected to pitch on back-to-back days as he's returning from a major injury. So we should see Sammy Nattera Jr. pitch the ninth if a save arises for the Angels. Yoenndrys Gomez has pitched on back-to-back days, so Jeff Hoffman should be the next man up. Justin Martinez is in the same boat as Ben Joyce. They're not going to push him on back-to-back days after just returning from Tommy John surgery. So Brandon Garcia should step up to be the Diamondbacks' temporary closer on Wednesday. Jacob Webb has pitched on back-to-back days, and Daniel Palencia is returning from the IL. So if Palencia is not just taking over the closer role outright for the rest of the season, now that he's healthy, Webb has pitched on back-to-back days. So Palencia should be the top option on Wednesday for the Cubs. And lastly, Riley O'Brien has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four. The Cardinals bullpen has been a bit overworked, but George Soriano has also pitched on back-to-back days, but not in three of the past four. So maybe he's the first man up for the Cardinals in the ninth inning on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to PitcherList.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the PitcherList staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the PitcherList stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.